When I made the acquaintance of Mr. Norcross, I inquired if I could clerk for his firm. He said they didn't need a law clerk at the time, but that I could use their library. How kind, I thought. How generous. Until, a short while later, when they hired a male clerk. And then when he left, they hired another male clerk. And then when he left, yet another. When they found themselves without a clerk, in times of emergencies, mind you, they did turn to me for help. And I served them quite well. But they always hired a man.
How could you let them treat you like that?
I got to use their law library.
In the late 19th century, Lavinia Goodell of Janesville, Wisconsin, fought against obstacles that blocked her path as she sought successfully to become the first woman licensed to practice law in Wisconsin. I'm Emily Auerbach, and this is University of the Year. A few years ago, Wisconsin's Director of State Courts Office, in consultation with the Office of the Chief Justice, commissioned a drama about Lavinia Goodell, Wisconsin's first woman lawyer. Playwright Betty Diamond directed readings about the story of Lavinia Goodell in various parts of the state. With funding from the Wisconsin Humanities Council, the Wisconsin Law Foundation sponsored a full-length play, which will have its premiere in Madison on March 19th, and then be shown in other locations in Wisconsin. We'll put links to information about upcoming performances on our University of the Year webpage. Joining me to talk about Lavinia Goodell, the story and the play, are the Honorable Shirley Abramson, Chief Justice of the Wisconsin State Supreme Court, playwright and director Betty Diamond, and cast members from Lavinia, Deborah Hurst, whom you just heard as Lavinia, along with Tim Irvin, Ilona Pinsky, Jim Ciolino, and Sherry Meland. Welcome to University of the Air.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I want to start with the concept behind the courts here in Wisconsin getting interested in this story of Lavinia Goodell.
Well, it's a story we've been telling ever since I got on the court in 1976 and then have been joined by several women. And it's a story that is not very well known, but we're trying to make it known. And for the sesquicentennial of the state of Wisconsin, the Supreme Court put on a play about the fugitive slave law and experiences in Wisconsin. And Betty Diamond, I think you directed that.
I did direct that, yes.
And it was a very successful play. I think it was supposed to run three times, and it was standing room only, and people demanded that it be put on more, and I think we ran two or three times more than that. And I finally said, look, the court's not in showbiz, although we loved it. Time to stop. And I met Betty at a theater performance in Madison, quite accidentally. We looked at each other, remembered fun times, and I said, well, you know, we can do another one, this one about Lavinia Goodell.
And with Lavinia Goodell, what does she mean to you? You know, you were the first woman on Wisconsin State Supreme Court. And isn't her picture up somewhere in the Capitol building?
Her picture is in my office, and her photograph is also in the office of Justice Ann Walsh Bradley. And when Jeanine Geske was a justice, the photo was in her office, too, with some of the words you'll hear in this play. And these photos and the words of Chief Justice Ryan were given to me by Justice Geske and Justice Ann Walsh Bradley on my becoming the Chief Justice of the Wisconsin Supreme Court in 1996. And we gave these to each other as a symbol and a memorial of that day.
And just this acknowledgement of this pioneering woman who fought for the right to practice law as a woman and to be able to go to the Supreme Court against this Chief Justice back then who would definitely have rolled in his grave if he had seen women being on the Supreme Court and serving as chief.
But Betty, if I can say, Lavinia's story is every person's story. Every man, every woman, anyone who has faced any barrier at all. It's her story and everyone's story that you can succeed. You can overcome the barriers.
Absolutely. And Betty Diamond, as the playwright, director, can you tell me what sort of you experienced when you turned to this story of Lavinia Goodell and what was important to you to convey in the play that you produced?
Well, given the fact that I was commissioned to write this by the court, I thought I'd better emphasize the legal stuff. But what I was really impressed with, because I had never heard of Lavinia Goodell before I started working on this project, and what I was really impressed with was the breadth of her experience. Yes, she was the first woman admitted to the bar in the state of Wisconsin. Yes, she was the first woman admitted to the bar of the Supreme Court of the state of Wisconsin. But she also was an active abolitionist. She was an active temperance worker. And she was an active woman working for women's suffrage. And she came from a family that was also very active politically, especially the father. And this is, you know, before the Civil War, and the father was very active in abolition. Their home was apparently a stop on the Underground Railroad. And when Lavinia expressed the desire to become a lawyer, it was her father rather than her mother who supported her. So I just found this really just interesting. I had never heard of her.
I noticed that when I was reading through the script that you have two different points in time. You have mm-hmm. the sort of older Lavinia toward the end of her life, and then she's kind of, there are scenes from earlier on. What made you kind of construct it that way?
I chose to kind of begin at the end, which is not the end of her life, but also the end of the political battle, where not only has she been admitted to the bar, she finds out that she's won her appeal. And then, so you sort of start at the end and then go back to say, how did she get to this place? Mm-hmm. And so I wanted the frame to be the present day and then be able to look at pieces from her past, both her personal past and the legal past, to show how they got to the present day.
Why don't you set up the scene that we're going to hear with the family? This would be back in time in 1855, mm-hmm. right? So it's heading into what will be the Civil War. Tell us what we're going to hear in this scene.
Well, this is the day that Lavinia announces she would like to be a lawyer. And we hear the family's reaction to this situation.
The mother and the father.
The mother, the father, and the sister.
I want to be a lawyer.
Rhoda Lavinia Goodell.
Oh, Vinny, do stop trying to be a man.
I think the study of law would be fun.
We can't afford to send you to college.
I don't need college.
I know Maria went for a year, but that was then. Now we can't afford it. I'm sorry.
It was not the Lord's will that I be rich.
I don't need college to be a lawyer. I can read law on my own. Lincoln did.
Who?
A lawyer in Illinois. Politician?
This is false and vain ambition.
It is our duty to do good, even if it involves sacrificing personal happiness. That's what Grandfather Goodell says.
Grandfather Goodell is a missionary to Constantinople. Of course he says such things. But I'm sure he does not mean his granddaughter should be a lawyer.
Surely not.
Times are changing.
It's out of the common course.
Oh, in all probability, I must teach. This is about all a woman can do.
He doth defend the fatherless and the widow, and loveth the stranger, giving him food and raiment. I see no reason why Lavinia shouldn't be a lawyer.
It's not womanly.
But what is more womanly than the desire to defend and protect the widow and the fatherless?
What doth the Lord require of thee but to do justice and to love mercy and to walk humbly with God?
But a lady lawyer.
All people have a common origin, Adam and Eve. To believe the Bible is to believe that all men are created equal.
We hold these truths to be self-evident. All men and women are created equal.
Must you continually quote Mrs. Stanton?
The true Christian path is to extend the vote to all. Free men and women.
The colored are God's children, but you can't believe they are in a condition to vote wisely.
If being wise were a condition for voting, then God would not have created the Democrats.
Zion shall be redeemed by justice. And to achieve that justice on this earth, women will need lawyers.
And I can be one of them.
If it's the Lord's will.
Deborah, let me ask you, as the person who's playing the role of Lavinia in this scene, what the character came to, and in this case it's a fictional character, but it's also a historical, actual person, but how you came to see her and play her.
Well, you know, being someone who is an historical figure that we have a picture of. You know, we have one representation of her, and then the rest of her legacy is primarily her words. That's where I would start in when trying to construct who I think she is and who she is to me. And then, so I just learned about her, you know, and I read about her, and I've obviously talked with Betty many times about Lavinia, and she's, you know, like, I think that... What Chief Justice said about her story being everybody's story. You know, I think that what I find the most interesting about Lavinia is that there's a line in the play when the character, Miss Stafford, asks her, you know, what she says, you know, did you have doubts when you first started? And then Lavinia's response is not about what was right, but about what was possible. It seemed that right at the beginning of her life, she had a very strong idea of what was right and what course she wanted to take in her life. She didn't know what that course was going to look like. She didn't know how she was going to get there, but she knew that she wanted to do something good and for society and relatively intellectual. And I think that her struggle began at an early age with that, because she had a view of what women looked like in front of her, and she didn't necessarily see what she wanted in that view. And I can definitely relate to that.
Well, I think of all the women writers that I teach where they were told literature's not the business of a woman's life. They had to take male pen names. They had to find some kind of way to trick the system and get their voices heard. You were talking, Betty, about the time period and also the fact that she was not only involved with the legal fight, but also with temperance and abolition and so on. You have quite a bit included in the play that has to do with prohibition and temperance. And there's a case that comes up involving temperance. Mm-hmm. Can you set that up for us?
So this was one of her early cases. And she was active on the speaker circuit. And so she talked, went to a lot of temperance conventions, and she was beginning to be noticed, not just as a lawyer, but also because of her activities in the temperance world. And it is really true that there were these women from Fort Atkinson who were very disturbed that all these men were applying for new liquor licenses to open saloons. And they also found some men, or discovered rather, some men who were selling liquor on the Sabbath, which was against the law. But nobody would prosecute them because, as they say, the Janesville system was in the thrall of the liquor men. So they went to, they're from a Fort Atkinson, so they went all the way to Janesville to talk to Lavinia and get Lavinia to represent them.
You have proof these men are selling liquor on the Sabbath?
We do.
Why come all the way to Janesville for a lawyer?
The district attorney for Jefferson County is a liquor man.
We have found it difficult to get any lawyer with courage enough to go up against the liquor interests.
When we heard you speak, we thought perhaps the lady lawyer might have.
Have?
The courage to go up against the liquor men.
I went to Fort Atkinson one afternoon and returned to Janesville the next night covered with glory. I managed the whole thing so quietly that the saloon men never dreamed there was anything afoot till they were arrested. It made me thirst for more liquor cases. And that wasn't the best part. The liquor men appealed the verdict. The day of the trial, I got to Fort Atkinson and was met at the train station.
I am so sorry that you have had to come all this way. The suit has been put off. We don't need to go up today.
The judge told me to be in Jefferson first thing this morning.
We heard that it had been postponed.
I told the witnesses they didn't need to come this morning.
You told the witness... How did you hear this?
Miss Barnes heard something. I'm not sure from who.
I've not been informed of any postponement. The judge told me to be in court this morning. The witnesses have been subpoenaed, and they are to come. You must let them know at once. When the train to Jefferson comes, we'll be on it.
So there's tricks being played on Lavinia here with this case and the, you know, the strong liquor men and so on. How did it turn out?
Well, it's actually something that she really seemed to enjoy because it, like oftentimes in, throughout her career, people were underestimating her. And so these men told the women that they didn't have to show up to court and everything was postponed, but she did not fall for the trick. She said, all right, we are going no matter what. And they arrived and everybody was so flustered on the other side that she, it put her at ease and amused her how flustered they were that she was not tricked. And she had a great time and argued the case and they won.
We're going to look more at the story of Lavinia Goodell, including the Chief Justice who wanted women to have nothing to do with law and particularly not the Supreme Court, when we continue in a moment with University of the Year. I'm Emily Auerbach, and I'm talking about a new play called Lavinia, premiering on March 19th. And with me, I have Wisconsin's first woman on the Supreme Court, Chief Justice Shirley Abramson, also Betty Diamond, the playwright of Lavinia, and many of the actors from the cast, including Deborah Hurst, who is playing the part of Lavinia, and also Tim Irvin, who we'll hear in a minute as Chief Justice Edward Ryan. Let's turn to Chief Justice Edward Ryan. We haven't heard his voice yet, and he's certainly a strong presence in the play and in the story of Lavinia Goodell. Let me start with you. As the Chief Justice, looking back at this Edward Ryan from the 1870s and so on, what can you tell me about him and what connection do you feel to that sort of person?
Well, Edward Ryan was a very important figure in Wisconsin history. He was very important in the slavery fight and then was appointed to, elected to the Wisconsin Supreme Court and became Chief Justice. And he was recognized as a very, very good Chief Justice and a very, very good justice. And in fact, there's a book written about him called Lion of the Law. So he was very highly regarded,
when
and
you
rightly
say good,
so.
Fair, someone who was fair. And...
fair, good, scholarly, well-prepared, cared. He happened to have a hang-up about women practicing law in front of the Wisconsin Supreme Court.
Why do you think that was? I mean, it was just part of the times? And
oh, there are probably several reasons, but he's like we all are. We're all people of the times, of our experiences, our families, what we believe in. And this he believed in and wrote a very forceful opinion that you will hear. And he then had two other colleagues on the court, and they joined him. It was a three-person unanimous decision. And Lavinia fought it. And she fought it on a political basis, because if Mr. Justice Ryan is going to depend on the law, then what you do is change the law. So you go to the legislature laws are enacted by the legislature. And that's what she did. And she was quite fortunate that she had very good friends, including the Speaker of the Assembly, who has a lot of control in the Assembly. And so, lickety-split, in record time, the law was changed to no longer relate only to the male with a male pronoun, but to make it gender neutral to practice law in the Supreme Court. Now, she was able to practice law in Janesville, Rock County. And there she was admitted by the local judge who gave her an oral exam along with others to be admitted to the Rock County Bar. And she was very highly regarded as being smart and a person of good moral character.
And we heard, you know, in the scene with the temperance women that she was considered somebody that could fight for a case. So she's practicing law in Janesville. Betty, where in your play do you have the first appearance of Chief Justice Edward Ryan, and how does the conflict appear with Lavinia?
Well, it comes with a case that she has of a woman named Mrs. Burrington, who is being sued by somebody who she feels she raised like a daughter, had her living in her home, had her do chores. But the woman now is suing her for wages. She was saying, I wasn't your daughter. You had me do this work. I want wages. So she goes to see Lavinia, and Lavinia loses in probate court. She loses in district court. So then she wants to appeal to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. And at that time, just because she was admitted to the Rock County Bar did not mean she was admitted to the bar of the state Supreme Court. And she had to apply for admission to the bar of the Supreme Court. And that's when we first hear Edward G. Ryan's opinions.
True, the statutes say, he shall be first licensed by order of one of the judges thereof.
This is the first application for admission of a female to the bar of the Wisconsin Supreme Court.
True, they also say, such judge shall be satisfied that such person possesses sufficient legal knowledge to entitle him to practice.
And it is just matter for congratulation that is made in favor of a lady whose character raises no personal objection, something perhaps not always to be looked for in women who forsake the ways of their sex for the ways of ours.
However, nothing in these provisions can be construed to debar a woman from the license to practice law.
The language of the statute applies to males only.
But as we all know from common practice, and as the statutes themselves say, every word importing the masculine gender only may extend and be applied to females as well as to males.
The rules merely declare what persons may be included when circumstances require. Admission to the bar of this court is at the discretion of this court.
There is nothing in the state law that prohibits a woman's admission to the bar, and nothing in the court's rulings.
If we should ignore the distinction of sex in this case, we do not perceive why it should not emasculate the Constitution itself and include females in the constitutional right of male suffrage.
It is unjust to arbitrarily shut out one half of the community from an honorable and remunerative field for which many of them have both taste and ability.
The peculiar qualities of womanhood, its gentle graces, its quick sensibility, its tender susceptibility, its purity, its delicacy, its emotional impulses, its subordination of hard reason to sympathetic feeling are surely not qualifications for forensic strife. Nature has tempered women as little for the juridical conflicts of the courtroom as for the physical conflicts of the battlefield. Our profession has essentially to do with all that is selfish and extortionate, knavish and criminal, coarse and brutal, repulsive and obscene in human life. It would be revolting to all female sense of innocence and the sanctity of their sex. By the court, the motion is denied. February 16, 1876.
That's a very memorable scene there with Chief Justice Edward Ryan and his successful denial of Lavinia's attempt to appeal before the Supreme Court. When you were creating this character, Betty, out of the historical facts, first of all, what did you use for the actual documentation, the primary source material, and then how did you envision the character?
Well, actually, a lot of the dialogue for Lavinia is from her diaries and letters, and a lot of the, what you heard is actually the written opinion. It's excerpts from the written opinion that the Chief Justice wrote.
Now, I don't hear any of the sort of, he's a good judge of, you know, respected scholar, fair person. I just hear kind of a blustering male chauvinist in that.
Well, yeah. And he had, I guess, for dramatic purposes, I emphasized his reputation for having a violent temper. He got into a number of fights, which amusingly he always seemed to lose. I mean, physical brawls. And he lost them, but he kept getting into them. And he did not get along well with some of his other justices. He thought he wrote these terrible letters about them, saying that they were idiots and fools. And, you know, so for my purposes, that was more entertaining. And he did have the reputation, though, of being very honorable, high-tempered, but honorable and honest. So there was that piece of him.
In some ways, he's a more interesting figure if you know he's also a good judge who just has this real, you know, narrow-mindedness. At the same time, it is at that point against the law for women to vote. That is the accepted thing. It is not allowed for women to practice in many different fields.
They can't be on juries.
Oh, is that right?
That's right.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know,
couldn't. Married women didn't have control of their own property.
Yes. So I suppose it helps to take us back to the time and what a fight it was for Lavinia to keep going forward.
And if you look at other states, there are other women that had similar fights, went up to the United States Supreme Court, and not all the time, but many of the time, they were barred.
Even though her petition is denied to go to the Supreme Court, she does continue to practice law in Janesville. Mm-hmm. First of all, what happens to her case then if she can't go to the Supreme Court? Does somebody else argue it for her?
Yes, a man.
Of course.
And they won.
So she just was denied the triumph of being there for her own case.
Right.
And then back in Janesville, what were some of the kinds of cases that she was working on that you thought were worth including in the play?
Well, there was this one case that was, again, based on reality, where this woman was, what did you call it? Fraud?
Consumer fraud.
Was the victim of consumer fraud, where this lightning rod salesman got her to sign a promissory note, and she thought it was for $500, but it turned out to be for $5,000.
He made it sound like a very good investment. He had papers.
Papers?
Papers with numbers.
Numbers?
Well, yes, numbers. Numbers about how many homes in Wisconsin need lightning rods and how many don't have them and how many lightning rods we could sell and how much it would cost to make a lightning rod and how much we could sell them for and how much money we could make. And he got me to sign. He seemed to be a very nice man. He was wearing the nicest jacket and the nicest shoes. They were black, I think. Or perhaps brown. And he used a walking stick. Isn't that elegant? Its handle was carved.
You signed papers, Mrs. Williams?
Well, yes, dear. That's why I'm here. Because I signed those papers.
Exactly what papers did you sign?
Legal papers. A promissory note, I think it's called.
You signed a promissory note?
Apparently, yes. But I didn't have my glasses. Tilly, she's my cat. Oh, she's quite a sweet cat, really. The prettiest faced. She wakes me every morning at 5:30 a.m. on the nose. Actually, on the nose. She jumps up in bed with me and puts her sweet little paw right here and taps and taps. She wants her food, you know. Mr. Williams, may he rest in peace, did not like Tilly for that very reason. But since he's passed,
she... The promissory note, Mrs. Williams?
The promissory note, yes. Tilly, that morning, when she was jumping on the bed, accidentally... Oh, I mean, she's a good, sweet cat. She accidentally broke my glasses, and I hadn't gotten them mended yet when that nice young man... Well, I thought he was a nice young man. When that young man came around and told me how clever I was and that he knew I could recognize a good deal when I saw one, I told him I'd invest $500, and he wrote down what I thought was $500 on the papers, and I signed them. And now it turns out the note was for $5,000, so you see...
Character of Mrs. Williams there reminds me of Miss Bates in Jane Austen's Emma, who just talks for pages about trivial things. And, you know, that it sort of, though, puts a human face on the law, that it is real people with foibles and idiosyncrasies and cats and glasses and all that. When you hear that as the Chief Justice, hears all kinds of cases, and you hear this sort of comic case, really, with Mrs. Williams in a way, comic and poignant at the same time. What strikes you?
Well, all the cases we hear involve people who have problems. They're just not merely case numbers or briefs, written briefs. They're human beings, and they've come to court or they come to a lawyer to help resolve the issues. So all of the foibles of human beings are there. In all of their problems. And they need help. And courts are there to resolve disputes fairly, according to the law and facts.
And it's not always as glamorous as in the sort of TV legal dramas, right?
No, and they don't finish in a half hour either.
As Lavinia is practicing law in Janesville, is she somewhat isolated or ostracized as a woman lawyer, or does she have friends and colleagues and people that are her sort of support?
She had a surprising amount of support in the legal community in Janesville. She reads law in the law library of someone named Pliny Norcross, and he really was a supporter, so that when she wanted to use his law library, he said fine, but he never did hire her as a clerk, even though she wanted to be hired as a clerk. He just kept hiring male clerks. He agreed to sponsor her application to be admitted to the bar in Janesville. But then when she was admitted to the bar and she won a case against him, he felt humiliated because people actually were laughing at him. Because he lost to a woman, and it almost cost them their friendship. On the other hand, she had a lot of supporters, as the Chief Justice mentioned, Cassaday, who was a legislator, but also a lawyer, and she circulated petitions to get her bills put in front of the legislature, and all the lawyers in town, you know, signed them. So she had a surprising amount of support in the legal community in Rock County.
And she still has that support. And if you go to the Rock County Courthouse in Janesville, you're going to see a plaque in her honor.
Well deserved. We're going to look at the final stages of Lavinia Goodell's life, including her physical struggles and what happens when she takes on the idea that a woman cannot go before the Supreme Court. Back in a moment with University of the Year.
Sometimes it's real fun to be a lawyer. You get to sue and prosecute people when they don't behave, and you get to show men you are more than they think.
That's Lavinia Goodell speaking about her experience being the first woman to practice law in Wisconsin. I'm Emily Auerbach. I'm back with Chief Justice Shirley Abrahamson, playwright Betty Diamond, and actors from the cast of Lavinia, including Deborah Hurst. And it's a play that will be having its premiere in Wisconsin as a full-length play on March 19th. And we have put information about other places in Wisconsin where you can see the production or find out more about it on our University of the Air website. We heard earlier from Chief Justice Edward Ryan, who was very, very vehemently opposed to the idea of women doing something as indelicate as practicing law and appearing before the Supreme Court. So originally, in 1876, Lavinia Goodell was denied her attempt to practice and to appeal a case to the Supreme Court. Tell me what happened to turn that around and how Chief Justice Ryan felt about that.
Well, the law got passed, and so she came back to the court and asked to be admitted. And it took a long, long time. And finally, the court issued a decision granting her the right to practice law before the Wisconsin Supreme Court. There was no opinion written. It was just a couple of lines. And Chief Justice Ryan stuck by his guns and was noted as dissenting.
Of course. Of course he did. And what do you do in the play, Betty, in order to bring back in the voice of Chief Justice Edward Ryan?
Well, I set a little scene where Lavinia is talking about how she has these bills that are going to go up in front of the legislature, and one of them is the bill that would bar the discrimination against women going up to the court. But I just wanted to say one other thing. 1876 was a very important year in Lavinia's life in all sorts of ways. She gets turned down. Her application gets turned down. She finds out that she's got ovarian cancer. And her mother starts showing signs of dementia. So she's dealing with all of these things at the same time and is still proposed, I think, 8 different bills dealing with various women's issues to the state legislature and got them to change the law. So that was when you asked me what I found remarkable about Lavinia, it was that she had all these things going on in her life and yet managed to move ahead and change the future of women in the legal system in Wisconsin.
What a fighter.
Yeah, really.
Let's hear a little bit of the comments of Lavinia Goodell in the play and then also some of the comments of Chief Justice Edward Ryan.
I must circulate my petition for the bill I'm proposing, the one that will ensure that no one is denied admission to the bar of any court in the state on the basis of sex. Speaker Cassaday has promised he would bring this bill to a vote.
The law that woman is proposing is an abomination. Every position of women in society, which essentially severs her from home or lessens her peculiar adaptation to the refined charities of home, is a prostitution of her sex and a heresy to nature.
All the lawyers in Janesville signed the petition.
They say the Chief Justice is adamantly opposed to the bill. They say he's been most unwell most of this winter. They say passing it might harm his health.
They say that?
And furthermore, the legislature cannot tell the courts who is fit to practice and who is not. The state suffers by every assault of one branch of government upon another. Idiots.
The bill allowing women to be admitted to the bar of the Supreme Court passed. The Chief Justice lived.
So Chief Justice Ryan lived despite having women come before the Supreme Court. He lost that. You mentioned, Betty, that Lavinia starts having so many different things that she has to struggle with in her life, including cancer. It is quite a tragedy, is it not, that she lived only to the age of 40?
Mm-hmm.
What do you imagine she might have done if she had had a full life legally, socially, politically? Personally, what would she have done, perhaps?
As I see her, she would have practiced law in Rock County, taken the cases that came to her office, and she would become interested in social issues of the day. And she had a case that was a criminal case, I think it was. Betty, you might remember this better. She became very interested in prison and prison reform,
mm-hmm.
which was not one of the issues before that. So I could see her looking at society, looking at her cases, and figuring out what had to be done next in order to make Wisconsin a better place in which we all live.
Well, if she had lived another 4 decades longer, she could have seen women get the right to vote.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Let's listen in on a scene from the play. Maybe you can set it up, Betty, the scene with her cousin where we learn about the health struggles and how she doesn't want to face them.
Yeah, what's interesting is that she'd been not feeling well for some time, and then she took a trip out east, and ostensibly it was to go to a temperance convention and to also take in the celebrations for the centennial, the 1876 celebrations. And those were reasons she went there, but they were sort of also covers because she wanted to go to consult doctors. And when she was out there, she was given the diagnosis of ovarian cancer. And so the scene that I wrote is she and her cousin, who went out with her, have come back to Janesville. It's, you know, she's still thinking about the conference, but also thinking about the diagnosis. And this is where we start the scene.
Mrs. Mott was inspiring, wasn't she? Women still suffer the degradation of disfranchisement. That's a nice turn of phrase. Degradation of disfranchisement.
Oh, ovarian tumors are not to be dreaded as they were 5 years ago.
I need to write to Maria. She will want to know how my speech went.
Lavinia, we must talk about this.
What is there to talk about?
There are many decisions.
The only decision is, do I die now or do I die later?
A surgery is a...
Who will take care of my parents? Maria lives so far now.
They will be taken care of.
I don't want to do this.
Do what?
Talk.
You are the strongest woman I know.
My life is over. Can I even have one moment of self-pity?
Shall we act out the last scenes of Hamlet? I'm sure we could find a number of fine, tragic speeches you could utter.
Would I get to be Hamlet?
Who else?
I don't have time for this.
For Hamlet?
For this. For any of this. I don't have time to be sick. I don't have time to weigh this treatment or that. I don't have time to go to doctors. I don't have time. I don't have time for any of it. I don't have the time. I don't have time. And I don't have time to be sad.
I don't know what to say.
Then don't say anything. Let's just sit.
It's interesting to hear the cousin say that she's the strongest woman that she's ever heard. It is strength that kind of strikes you the most about Lavinia, is it not?
Mm-hmm. You had to be strong to go into a field that women were not in. You had to be strong to persist. You had to be strong when your family is not really supporting you, at least to begin with. And I think the interesting thing about her is that she's strong and she stays on her path, but that she's always paying attention to her family. She's always helping all of them, her mother, her father, sister. And it's like all of us. We have multifaceted lives, and we have to be true to each part of our lives.
I think there's one scene where a character asks her about, well, by coming to New York from New York to Janesville to take care of your family, aren't you doing what you're saying women shouldn't do? Aren't you putting your personal life ahead of your career?
Mm-hmm.
So the act of coming to Wisconsin itself was in some ways a choice on her part to remove herself from a place where a lot more was happening than in Wisconsin at that time. Is that right?
That's right. And yet, she also, once she gets here, says, yeah, I don't feel like just mending dresses. So I've been wanting to do this for a long time. I guess I'm going to read law, you know? So even though she came to take care of her parents, she also went on her own path.
It's hinted at in the play, but not really addressed. But what about her decision not to marry and how she sort of goes a path of being really a woman alone, except for having her parents, sister, cousin, and so on, but she does not become Mrs. Anybody.
Right. There was not that much about her relationships. There were hints that she had some suitors, but no one satisfied her, I guess, or it didn't work out. But it was her choice, and that's what I really liked. I mean, the lines that are in the play are really things that she said in letters, that I choose not to. I could have married so-and-so, but I choose not mm-hmm. to. I can afford to live alone.
I like the line from Louisa May Alcott, who, of course, would have been about the same time period, saying, I would rather be a free spinster and paddle my own canoe. Mm-hmm. So, and I suppose for a woman who wants the freedom to really put her work forward and so on, to not have the constraints of expectations, what she would, and before birth control too, it would have been a different kind of life. Deborah, as the person who plays Lavinia, how do you sort of see her at the end there, dealing with cancer but fighting for the time to do more with her life?
I think that the thing that she struggles with the most towards the end is the fact that she feels like she's running out of time. And she has so much that she wants to accomplish. And even when she's trying to read law and she's just trying to study law and that is her focus, she's also juggling 30 different things at the same time. She's never still. She's always working, 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 working right up until the end. Even the play takes place. Is it 20 days?
Mm-hmm.
20 days before she passes away. And she's worried and talking about whether or not this appeal was granted. And mm-hmm. I think, you know, I think we can all certainly relate to that. All the things that we want to accomplish and the things that we're trying to focus on and being worried that we don't know how we're going to be able to do it.
Yeah, and she feels robbed of the chance, you can tell. But it's interesting, isn't it, that she keeps thinking about her clients and the cases and wanting to do right by them. There's another scene in the play that's quite poignant with her father. Can you set that up, Betty?
Yeah, her mother, as I mentioned, is diagnosed, well, they don't know what it is, but she actually is sent to Mendota, which at the time was referred to as the asylum, but it was seen as very forward thinking. She likely had what we would now recognize as Alzheimer's. So at a certain point, they had to send her to Mendota, and then the father was aged. He was about 80, which is pretty old for that time period, and he was still living at home, but was not well himself. And so this is a moment that he shares with Lavinia after the mother is sent to Mendota.
Suffrage meeting tonight?
Literary Society. It's my night to present. Will you be all right alone for a time?
I'm fine. I'm fine. I have my work.
I should be back by 9.
Lavinia, thank you. I've said it before, but thank you.
No thanks are due.
The house is so empty now that Mother isn't here.
Moving my office home made good business sense, and it's much more economical. And now I have you to call on any time I need help.
What are you speaking about tonight?
Tennyson.
Though we are not now that strength which in old days moved earth and heaven, that which we are, we are.
One equal temper of heroic hearts.
Made weak by time and fate, but strong in will.
To strive, to seek, to find, and not to yield.
You don't want to be late.
You'll be all right?
Of course, of course. Now go.
There are a lot of literary references in the play to Tennyson, to Shakespeare, to, you know, Harriet Beecher Stowe and so on. And you can tell it was an extremely literate family. And she was lucky, I suppose, to have a father kind of like Jane Austen's father who encouraged her to use the library, who helped her get published. But to have a father who believed in her must have been an important factor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very much.
If audiences come and see the play Lavinia and then go out of the theater back into their own lives, what are you hoping they would take away? How would they be different after seeing the play or after just encountering in their own way this story of Lavinia Goodell?
Well, I'd hope they'd see a committed person who cared about the entire community and cared about all people. And her immediate goal for herself was to get admitted to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. But she cared about the clients that came to see her. She cared about temperance. She cared about slavery. She cared about prison reform. These were all important issues to her. And at the same time, she cared about her family, and she took care of them. So we can do many things, and we should see people as individuals who can do many things, and we should try and avoid stereotyping people. And why don't we give them a wide berth and give them a chance, give them an opportunity, and let's see what they can do.
And for you?
That, and how relevant her situation is to today. The line that she says, "I'm certain women will be awarded equal pay for equal work," is a line she actually wrote.
That was just said recently at the Oscars.
There you go.
Yes.
That's what I'm saying. What this play seems historical, but also incredibly relevant. So, for example, she was the first woman admitted to the bar in Rock County, and Judge Barbara McCrory is the first woman elected judge in Rock County, and she was elected in 2012. So there's some relevance still in the situation of Lavinia.
Well, I thank all of you for being here for this hour of University of the Air. It's been a pleasure, and I wish you all the best in the outreach work being done to put on performances of the play and also get the story into high schools and to trigger discussions about the court system, about gender and the law, about anyone who's a sort of pioneering figure trying to break barriers that can get in the way. I'm Emily Auerbach, hoping you can join us for the next hour of University of the Air.